we get the hour underway by welcoming to the program an actor that you know from films like Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, countless television series, 6 Feet Under, Young Sheldon, St. Elsewhere, Better Call Saul. And he's also a committed environmental activist. We are thrilled to be joined this afternoon by Ed Begley Jr.
Thanks so much for having me on, buddy.
Appreciate it. Happy to talk with you. I've been a fan of your work for a long, long time. And we'll talk about acting, but I want to start by talking about Begley's Best and the terrific earth-friendly, earth-responsible products that you've come up with, and how you've partnered with, I want to make sure I get it right, Lab Clean Incorporated. Can you tell us about these products?
You know, back in 1970, I was a broken, struggling actor, so I couldn't do a lot of the green stuff I wanted to do, but I got involved in 1970 and did what I could afford. Instead of harsh cleansers, I used baking soda. Instead of, you know, Comet, I used vinegar and water instead of, you know, Formula 409. And that stuff worked okay, but I had a feeling there might be something better than just vinegar and water and baking soda. So I finally met this guy, Mark Cunningham at Lab Clean, and he has these great formulas, very clean, and he got what's called EPA Designed for the Environment certification. So they're certified by a third party, and they clean really good. You know, most people will try a green product, but if it doesn't clean as good as their nuclear weaponry they're used to, they're going to go back to that stuff. You know, so you got to really have something that cleans good, and those products do. So thank you for bringing it up, buddy. That's so nice of you.
Oh, you bet. And these are all plant-based products as well.
They are that. And you can get them at Amazon. Just type in Begley Cleaning at Amazon, or just do a Google search, Begley Cleaning products, and it'll come right up. You don't have to remember any website. If you want to go to edbegley.com, that's another way in. But if you're on Amazon or something, just type in Begley's or cleaning and it'll do it.
Now, I've always respected the fact that you haven't just talked the talk when it comes to environmental activism. You've walked the walk, and you've done it, as you mentioned, for a long, long time. I understand it was part of this was your growing up in smoggy Los Angeles that helped you understand the need to do things differently.
Yeah, there were some negative influences on me. One was living in that smog for 20 years. The other was that Cuyahoga River when it caught fire back in 1969. I thought that was bad. I think that led to the awareness on Earth Day the next year, 1970. A lot of people got involved. But the positive was also important, too. My dad, you know, was the other side of the aisle politically for me, but he was a great father and a great man. And he really did what he said and taught me to do the same. You know, he was the son of Irish immigrants. He had lived through the Great Depression. So we turned off the water. We saved string. We saved tinfoil. Turned off the electricity. That's just the way I was raised. I got that from my dad. And so he was also very good about talking about what you could do, not what you couldn't do. He said, I'd be complaining. I hate the smog, Dad. What's with this smog? I hate the smog. He said, I know what you're against. I'm against the smog too. But what are you for? What are you doing about it? So he died within a few days of the first Earth Day back in 1970. And I did a lot of stuff to honor him as much as anything else. And I bought my first electric car. And I knew nobody was selling electric cars in 1970. But I just figured to shut my recently deceased father up talking to me, I'd look in the yellow pages and say, I looked for them. They don't have any electric cars in 1970.
Yeah, but
and
you
I
found,
was a crazy 20.
You huh? found you found Dutch from Reseda, right?
You know your stuff, my friend. I looked there just to please my deceased father, you know, talking to me, saying, you didn't even try. I looked to see it's not there. What? There's somebody, it's electric vehicles in the white pages of the Valley phone book in the San Fernando Valley. And I called up this guy named Dutch. And I was the only person under 70 that bought one from him, I think. It was $950. They sold them mostly in retirement communities for people tooling around to go to the Mahjong tournament or the bingo game. You know, it didn't have a steering wheel. It had a tiller. I'm being quite grand when I call it a car. It was an electric golf cart, basically, with a windshield wiper and a horn. But I drove it around the valley. And here's what I got in my benefit right away. I had my bragging rights to say I was cleaning up the smog. But it was also much cheaper to fuel than gasoline, the same way an electric car is today. And it was also much cheaper to maintain, the same way it is today. There's no tune-up or oil change or fan belt or radiator flush or smog check or valve job. You didn't have any of those maintenance things. And I stayed with them a lot ever since.
Now, we also had a guest on our show tell us that you even showed up at her house to pick her up for a date once in that car.
Cindy Williams was on your show?
Yes, she was.
I love Cindy Williams. She's been a great friend and an inspiration to me for many years. Talk about a great lady. And I did pick her up on a date. I'll tell you right now, I'll jump ahead and time in the story to tell you I didn't get a second date out of her after this first one. I picked her up in this electric car. I don't think I had it fully charged. I misjudged the hill that the restaurant was up in a bit of a hill. And there was a kid passing us in Hot Wheels, I think, giving us a finger. So it was a little slow. It wasn't exactly a babe magnet, this car. But we became great friends, and we've been friends ever since. And yes, she got a ride in my electric car in 1970. It was a Taylor Dunn electric car. You can look it up. They still make electric cars today. They're really, the ones they sell are more for retirement communities or for, you know, a college campus or a warehouse where you don't want to be tooling around a gasoline-powered thing to make pollution in your warehouse. So people go around, pick up parts, and drop them off with an electric vehicle.
Now, Cindy also told us that you came to a party at her house once, plugged in your more recent electric car, and blew out all the lights.
I did. We were listening to some Christmas music and what have you, and had the Christmas lights around the tree, and Ed ruined all that for everybody. I wised up, though. I put it on another circuit from all that. I found a separate 20-amp circuit, and we were fine. But the first go at it was a bit of a disaster. Everybody at the Christmas party hated me. Scrooge McBegley.
We're talking with Ed Begley Jr. here on Downtown. Well, you've talked a lot through the years about what individuals can do. And you've talked about not trying to do it all at once. Don't save the world right away. But we can all take small steps and eventually bigger steps to reduce our carbon footprint.
Yeah, you don't run up to the top of Mount Everest. You get to base camp and you get acclimated and you climb as high as you can. Not everybody's going to get a Tesla 9 kilowatts of solar like me. I couldn't afford that myself in 1970. I'm not suggesting people do it any different than the way I did it. I was a broken, struggling actor in 1970. I could afford a bicycle. I could afford a bus pass, some baking soda and vinegar and water, you know, stuff like that I could do. So do what you can and then climb as high as you can later. Pick the low-hanging fruit first. Get the energy-saving light bulbs, energy-saving thermostat, you know, weather stripping around your doors and windows. Ride a bike if weather and fitness permit. Take public transportation if it's available near you. Home gardening, home composting. Everything on that list I just gave you, dirt cheap, do that and then move on.
You and Bill Nye still having a competition about who is leaving the smallest carbon footprint?
Yes, we are. And now it's a little bit more in my favor because I have a LEED Platinum home. What we both did, we tried to make our existing 1936 homes, built 1936, make them more energy efficient. And you can only take a home like that with thin walls like that so far. And it doesn't have passive solar design the way my home does now. But all those years, Bill would beat me every time with his monthly bills, but it wasn't a fair fight because there's one person in his house, him, now two, he's got a girlfriend, I think, all the time. But back then they were single and one guy and we were three people in our house and the lady sadly took long showers and a few other things. I shouldn't throw my girls under the bus, but it wasn't a fair fight. But now I'm doing a lot better. They got a LEED Platinum home. I'm ready to go toe-to-toe with Bill Nye again. You're on report there, Bill.
You don't use that shower timer for your wife anymore, do you?
No, that didn't work out well for the marriage. It did very good for monitoring her time in the shower, but it was a long-term problem. She resented me timing her shower, so now I delicately urge her to take shorter showers.
Well, so many highlights in your remarkable acting career. And one show I want to talk about because it was a favorite of mine when I was a young guy, and we've talked to so many people who were a part of it, your friend Cindy Williams, the great writer Treva Silverman, and that's Room 222, a show that was way ahead of its time.
Great show. Lloyd Haynes, Michael Constantine, Denise Nichols, great cast, Karen Valentine. And Bruno Kirby got one of his earliest jobs in it. I got one of my earliest jobs in it. Richard Dreyfuss was in an episode, one of his earliest jobs. You know, they gave a lot of good people work. And David Jolliffe is still around. He was on the show. And lots of other people like that that were part of the show. Eric Launeville, too, worked on St. Elsewhere, too. We had a great time. We did good shows. And you know, it was great training to learn there at 20th Century Fox. I kind of was thrown into the mix and got to learn on the set because I didn't know what the hell I was doing back in the 60s when I started as an actor. My dad was an actor. I went, that looks easy. Get me a job on Gunsmoke. Get me a series. I want to do a wagon train or a Perry Mason. You know, I didn't have the skills, but I finally took some classes and did some training and I got better.
Well, you mentioned St. Elsewhere. For my money, still one of the great series of all time in television history. And your character, Victor Ehrlich, was so terrific. The writers did a wonderful job establishing your character, and your acting was brilliant. But what a terrific ensemble it was to be a part of.
So lucky to work with those people. David Morris, Denzel Washington, Bonnie Bartlett, Christina Pickles, Ed Flanders, Norman Lloyd, who just passed away. You know, I mean, to meet Bill Daniels, I was such a fan of his, and Ed Flanders and Norman I'd worked with before, but get to know these people like Denzel and David Morris and these talented, you know, my good friend Howie Mandel, we're still friends and see each other. Eric Larneville, I just spoke to the other day, talented actor, talented director, one of the best in his field today, working as a longtime working director. He's a great guy, and I'm just lucky to have these friends still.
We had a couple of years ago, we had Bill Daniels and his wonderful wife, Bonnie Bartlett, on our show. He could not have been a nicer person to talk with. And I understand he was a great mentor for you. He had worked with your dad, and they shared some similar background and traits.
They did. They knew each other back in the day, and he was so kind to me. You know, I'd seen him in Two for the Road, that wonderful Stanley Donen movie. I'd seen him in Parallax View. I'd seen him in, you know, all that 1776, and he was on stage in Zoo Story. I didn't have the pleasure of seeing that, but I knew of his work and seen a lot of it. So the idea of working with Bill Daniels or Ed Flanders, who was, you know, in Moon for the Misbegotten on Broadway, and just an incredible actor. And and what about the writers? Tom Fontana, you know, incredible writer. John Macias, Josh Brann, and John Falsey, these incredible writers that we had. So lucky to work with them, you know, for all those wonderful years. 6 years of great shows and great times.
You've had great success as well in many of the Christopher Guest mockumentaries, among my favorite films. They're such great casts. How much of that, when you do a Christopher Guest film, how much of that is improvisation?
He and Eugene Levy would do all the heavy lifting. They would write the treatment that took them about a year to do. You know, that they would write together this 25-page treatment and get all that right. Then we'd show up and set and just have a party, because all we had to do is, you know, do what it said on the page. It just had Jerry and Cookie Fleck try to check into the hotel. Their credit card doesn't work. And the Jerry and Cookie Fleck characters are played by Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, two SCTV geniuses and geniuses of many films and live shows and everything. So to work with them, I had to just hold my own and not say anything too stupid. And, you know, you're along for the ride. And Michael Higgins and Michael McKean are checking in later at the same desk. And you just had to stand there and try to keep a straight face and not go, blah, ha, ha, you know, all over them with some of the antics they're up to on the other side of the desk. And it was a great joy. And I love whenever Chris gives me a call for those movies.
You did a movie for HBO that I thought was terrific. I'm a full-time civics and history teacher with high school students, and I showed this movie to my class, and that's Recount, that did an amazing job, I thought, of capturing all that went on back in 2000 when we thought maybe that was the worst it would ever get, how little we knew.
Right. Yeah, wonderful, wonderful movie. Jay Roach, you know, directed that, a great director and a great guy. Got to work on that. It was a real pleasure to do. And it's an important time in history. You know, I've known Al Gore since he was a senator. And, you know, everything that went on at that time is something historically to remember and to try not to repeat. We don't have problems like that occur in the future. So I think, thank you for bringing it up. It's a very important movie.
Around that same time, you also worked with our friend Ed Asner on Racism Watch, keeping an eye on what was going on the Bush campaign. Why are we back? Why this problem rears its ugly head more than ever? No one thought that we had put racism behind us, but were we wrong to think we had made progress at some point in America?
Well, I thought we had made more progress than we in fact had. That was my mistake, thinking that. And with Charlottesville and other things, the kind of messages people had on their coats and on their flags and what have you, January 6th is just, you know, I thought we were beyond that, but I guess not. We got more work to do, but I'm all about coming together and, you know, finding common ground. And I hope we can do that. We need to heal. And I hope that occurs. And, you know, my dad was a great guy. And even though he was the other side of the aisle, we always found common ground and we agreed on much. So I hope we can get back to that. I hope and pray we can.
Ed Begley Jr. with us here on Downtown. I want to talk about some of your recent work, and man, you just keep so very busy. Could you talk a little bit about a series that had, for my money, far too short a run because it was wonderful. Another great ensemble, Bless This Mess.
I love doing that show. You know, I'm such a fan of Lake Bell and Dax Shepard. And, you know, Liz is such a great writer. She's just amazing. So to be, you know, part of this show that Liz, who did New Girl, had done, you know, and Lake wrote the script with her, just I was just over the moon. And then they say I'm going to be working with Pam Grier. I just couldn't believe it. I've been a fan of hers for years, and we got to play two people who had a romantic attraction, and she's been my friend now ever since we did that, and hope we get to work together again. Just amazing 2 years of great shows. And Liz Merriweather, again, is a great writer and a great talent. I hope I get to work for her again. Liz is brilliant.
I read somewhere too that you said you could identify with that character, the interloper on somebody else's property.
Definitely. I mean, my wife has me confined to a small area of the property, and I'm wandering around aimlessly in my bathrobe, so I'm not very much different than Rudy.
It's also been great to see you on Young Sheldon, another great cast and another character that you make stand out.
It's such a good show. You know, I was a fan of, Big Bang. My brain's sometimes that disappoint me at age 71. The Big Bang Theory is a great show. And so then I heard they're doing this show and watched it and loved it. Then I get a call, you know, to be on the show. I just couldn't believe it, that Chuck Lorre and all those wonderful people wanted me to be in their show. And it's not only funny, but it's about something every week. It's very heartfelt and wonderful. And Steve Molaro is a great showrunner, a great writer, and just incredible scripts they turn out every week. And I'm just pleased to be on it now. I think this is their fifth year, and I'm over the moon to be working with them yet again.
What do you look for in roles, Ed?
You know, I really don't care if it's a play, if it's a movie, if it's a TV show. There used to be a big hard line between movie actors and TV actors. And now that's changed. You see people, you know, big stars wanting to do TV series because they look at what Bryan Cranston did with Breaking Bad. And now movie stars want to do something like that, not just do a, you know, hour and a half or 2 hour, you know, movie and be done with it. But to do something, to have an arc of a character that lasts 6 years, is a joy beyond description. And so there's another wonderful show called, Better Call Saul. And so I'm very proud to be part of that over those years. It's a wonderful show. And I'm thinking about Bob Odenkirk every minute right now. I know he, something happened on the set. And so he's recovering, I understand. And I hope he's well. And I just send lots of love and light to the great Bob Odenkirk, my dear friend.
Absolutely. Well, Michael McKean from Better Call Saul has been on with us.
Oh, my God.
And Patrick Fabian. And I love it. It's my favorite show on television. Your character, David, is so great on that. And it's another remarkable ensemble. And it did that rare thing, I think, of a prequel, in this case, being every bit as good as the series it was based on.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. You know, Ray Sehorn and Patrick Fabian and all those incredible people, Michael Mando, I mean, just unbelievable. Jonathan is so great. I've known Jonathan for years. He's such a great actor, such a great character. So, I'm just proud to work with those people over the years. And I can't wait to see this last episode. And, last season, and indeed the last episode.
And you also were part of another phenomenal group of actors and writers on 6 Feet Under.
Yeah, what an opportunity that was to work with Francis Conroy, Alan Ball, and all of them, and Alan Poole. Just incredible stuff. You know, I got a call to audition for this show back in 96. My agent said, I don't want you to audition. I don't like it when you have to audition. They should just offer it to you. I said, no, you got it wrong. A great script like this, I want to go and audition. I want to read it so I can play the part in the room. I don't care whether I play it. I suppose I care a little bit if I get to play it again in front of a Panavision or a digital camera, you know, later, you know, back then they still did some shows on film, but that's a bonus to get to do it for pay and in front of a camera or an audience. but I get to do it in the room and play that character. So please let me go in and read for it. And I did. And I was thrilled when I got the part because the script was so good. Then we saw it at the, I think it was in Hollywood at the Egyptian Theater. They had a screening and I went, oh my God, what did I fall into here? It was so good, that show. Just everybody knew it was going to be good, but it was just so brilliant from the opening theme to the last minute of the show. It was extraordinary and had many wonderful years, of course, with that great cast and those great writers.
You've had success in film and television, but boy, it sure seems like we're really in a golden age. There's so much good television, so many platforms available now, and so many people getting to ply their trade in ways that didn't exist even 20 years ago.
They say that the old days, my father's age in television, you know, Patty Chayefsky and Sidney Lumet and those people, my father, those great actors and writers, they say that was the golden age of television, Rod Serling and all that, the golden age. I think they're correct. This is the platinum age of television. When you have people like, these incredible writers that are doing the kind of shows we see today, it's just amazing. Vince Gilligan, Alan Poole, Alan Ball from 6 Feet Under, Liz Merriweather doing New Girl and Bless This Mess. These are great, great writers. And I think this is really the platinum age of television that we're seeing now with, Handmaid's Tale and all of that. These are incredible shows that are on for many years and just people are drinking it up because it's so good.
What made you want to act? Was it your father? Was it watching him?
My dad.
Yep.
I think if my dad was a plumber, I'd be fitting pipe right now. I just wanted to do what he did, but I had that naivete and I had that ignorance. Let me go. I want to do what you do, Dad. It looks easy. and get me a job on Gunsmoke, as I said earlier. Imagine the son of a plumber saying, that looks easy. I see you kind of put the copper pipes together like that. The steel pipe goes together a little different. I can do that. Let me go do a job now in a house. What's the address? I'll go fix somebody's plumbing. It doesn't work like that. You have to apprentice. You have to train. And I had no knowledge of that. And so fortunately, I didn't get fired or anything early on. I kind of learned on Room 222 and other jobs like that. I learned by doing. But I finally took some classes and got better at it. But it's amazing. Even the son of an Academy Award winning actor, I didn't quite get what was involved in doing it. But fortunately, I did before disaster struck.
Well, you do it, certainly. Every performance you give, I don't think I've ever seen a bad one, even when it's not a stellar film or television show. Ed Begley is always awesome, although it seems to me like you also elevate those around you.
You're very kind to say that, my friend. I just try to keep up with the names I mentioned before. Just incredible talent of writers and directors and actors, so I'm lucky to work with him at my advanced age of 71. I hope it continues a few more years or a few more months even, I'll take it. Now, there's a Richard Kimball that was my friend that was a DJ here in the LA market. I don't know if you ever heard of him, Richard Kimball.
I have, as a matter of fact. Yeah, back when I first started in radio back in the 70s, a couple times our names would cross in like Billboard magazine and people would say,
right.
Yeah, Richard, why did you go to Maine? You're in LA. What are you doing?
It's funny.
It is.
Well, I'm so glad to meet you and get to know you a little bit. You're wonderful to talk to, and hope we talk together again soon, Rich.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And by the way, we'll be talking with Cindy again next week. So if your ears are burning, you'll know why.
I will tune in. I can't wait to hear more about this woman I love.
And thank you so much. Be well. It's great talking with you.
You too, Rich.